The following program is presented by Hanson McLean.
It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today, both myself and my co-host. We're both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with today or you're doing things on your own, you want a second opinion, whatever the case may be, we are glad you are tuning into Hanson McLean's Money Matters as we're in our, I guess we're in our 20th year.
Right? We are.
20th year of broadcasting this program.
We started right around this time of year, didn't we? Did we not?
We started, I think, mid-year.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. I remember the first Christmas because my daughter was born, and you did the show, and you interviewed Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. 20 years ago, about how to get his financial house in order.
That's pretty. Hey, we tried.
Yeah, and there was Lou.
It was Gusecki.
Lou Gusecki.
Yeah, you did financial planning for Santa.
He actually did a pretty
good.
All four
listeners who managed to stay through the program enjoyed it. But
he actually, Lou, he did a pretty good imitation. Not that it's hard, not that we really know what Santa sounds like, but he sounded like a convincing Santa.
Not that we, ho, 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 we know the ho, ho.
Well, since it's a fictitious character, don't. Okay.
Although my daughter, I think it was like first grade, my daughter, she figured out early, that's not really real, is it? And then she proceeded to tell all her friends at school. And I remember a couple of moms were a little upset with the Hanson family for a while because
the Hanson family wasn't prepared.
I do remember one time my daughter says to me.
Wait, stop. What if there's kids listening in the car right now and someone's radio?
I remember my daughter, she's asking about the Christmas story and she says, Dad, was Jesus really placed in a manger? And I said, yeah, there was no room for the inns. They had them in a manger. Are you sure about that, Dad?
That's kind of funny.
Anyway, this is a financial program. We're already off topic, and we're yet, a minute in? Anyway, we come here each week to talk about the financial matters and, of course, take your calls, answer your questions regarding the world of finance. And if you'd like to be part of the program, it's November 15th. We are live and in the studio and love to take your call. To join the program on anything financially related, whether it has to do with the markets. Now we're here sitting right around new highs again, which is kind of hard to believe considering the volatility we had just a few weeks back. So that whether you want to talk about the markets or something in your own portfolio, if you're wondering if it's a good time to be buying something or selling something, or maybe someone's making a recommendation to you and you're wondering if it's really in your best interest or not.
If someone's pushing a variable annuity or a variable indexed annuity.
If you want to be part of the program, the contact number here to join us, 916-921-1530. Again, the call-in number here is 921-1530. Toll-free is 1-800-834-1530. And you can send us an email at questions@moneymatters.com. Questions@moneymatters.com, or you can go on the KFBK website and you'll find us there somewhere and you can click a couple buttons.
Under shows.
Is it under shows?
Or programs. One of the two. They call it programs or shows.
Top programs.
I think it's just programs.
Anyway. Anyway,
but we're there. And if you'd like to join the show, 921-1530. We'll get you on the air.
So this week, it's been an interesting week to look at a couple scandals.
Oh, yes.
The local guy, what was his name?
He's Sri Lankan. Wantabe. Wattanbee.
$20 million Ponzi scheme, essentially.
It was up to $100 million. They think it was up to $100 million. But it's always hard in a Ponzi scheme because people count
made-up numbers.
Yeah, people count the made-up numbers as money they lost.
Right. So, in any case, I shouldn't be laughing. He got sentenced to 20 years this week, which was, I think, a great thing.
And he was prominent in the greater Sacramento area, as part owner of the Sacramento Capitals.
For a period of time, he was prominent.
He's still prominent.
Huh? He's in a different way, I suppose.
Not in a good way. But it was a very, very large... One of the investors said they had lost $22 million.
So here's how this happens. This is here's an individual who has his own company who says, I want you to invest in my company. So a check's written to some company that somebody creates. You really have no control at that
point. And he had a real company.
It's different than when you say hire an investment advisor. Let's say you go to a brokerage firm, one of the large brokerage firms. You're not investing the money in that broker. You're giving the money to the brokerage firm. You hire an independent advisor, a firm like Hanson McLean. Typically, money is set at Charles Schwab or Fidelity or TD Ameritrade, an independent company.
Holds the asset.
Yeah, so the advisor doesn't have any access to it. But when you do something like this, what you're really doing is saying, all right, I'm going to give up control of my money because I believe this individual...
I trust this person.
...has some great business idea, and I'm going to make a lot of money by giving my money to this individual.
And he actually had a real company. He had a real company. What people should have asked was to look at the tax returns or some of the invoices. Although someone at one point in time did ask to look at invoices, and he made up phony invoices. But a tax return would tell you quite a bit.
My guess is he wasn't audited. His financials weren't audited.
That's a good point. Yeah, you want audited financial statements if you're actually investing in a company. But for most people, you're better off just investing in something that is publicly traded that you know the price of on a daily basis.
I mean, at least if something's publicly traded, there's certain rules and guidelines that they need to follow. Every once in a while, there's a company that cooks the books. But we certainly haven't seen an Enron or a WorldCom for a long time. And a lot of it had to do with the Sarbanes-Oxley bill that was put into law years ago that just put a lot more requirements and suddenly made the financial officers and the CEO personally liable.
Which changed the story a little bit.
They couldn't quite say, well, I didn't know. Well, I didn't know. So anyway, you watch these kind of stories, and every time I read about a story like this, I think, you know, anytime an investor is burned, it's not good for long-term savers. It's not good for the average person who's trying to save and wonders who can I trust with my money? Where can I put my money for a decent return, and whom can I trust? It is challenging.
Well, part of this, but part of the thing that actually reeks scam is the rates of return this guy was promising.
What was he promising?
And they were like 12%+ guaranteed.
Well, come on.
Yeah.
When the bank's paying 0.002.
Anything above that has risk.
And they're not going to guarantee it.
Yeah.
Anything. When a CD's paying, the long-term CD's paying 1% or whatever they're paying.
Yeah. That's what this, a friend called me this week, and they had their insurance agent on the phone. And the insurance agent was pitching an indexed annuity to him this week. And he said, oh, it's got a guarantee of 4%.
No, it doesn't.
That's what I said. I said, tell me if the 10-year...
Show me the contract.
I said, if the 10-year treasury is at a little bit over 2%, we're going to consider that a risk-free rate of return over a 10-year period. How do you get to 4 without any risk?
And what did the insurance agent say?
He actually didn't know what he was talking about.
What a surprise.
He really didn't understand his own product. He had no idea. He said, no, how it's invested.
The guy truly believed it was a guaranteed minimum 4%.
Correct. He said that you can't do any less than 4.5%. You can't do any less than 4.5%. I said, well, that's not true.
Not in today's market.
No, that's what it says.
Oh. And if someone's trying to get money from you and they're telling you it's going to a guaranteed 10 or guaranteed 12%.
Run away.
Well, I'm thinking, if it's such a sure deal, why do they need your money?
Why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they just go to a bank and borrow money at 3%?
If you could get a guaranteed 10 or 12% rate of return, they certainly wouldn't be talking to someone with just $1 million to put money into
it. Or less, right?
You'd have every hedge fund in the world chasing you.
Of course you would. Yeah.
And forget this friends and family thing. I hear that all the time.
What friends and family?
Well, have you heard? You've gotten that pitch. Hey, you've got this new thing coming on board here.
Oh, it's only available.
I'm only going to open it up to begin with for friends and family. How lucky am I?
That's special.
How lucky am I?
I'm doing it just out of the goodness of my heart. I just want to help those that are close to me. I just like helping people.
Have you heard that before? It's just open to friends and family. Lucky, come on over. How lucky am I to be your friend?
I didn't even know we're friends.
I didn't know what you're...
This is awesome, honey. I have a friend.
What's your last name again?
What's your last name? My good friend, just a friend and family deal. Please sign this NDA while you're at it.
Yeah, non-disclosure. Oh, I didn't want to know what it was in the first place. Why do I want to sign something that says I'm not ever going to repeat it?
Anyway, all right.
Enough. We crack ourselves
up. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Mike, Barbara, Jimmy, and we'll talk to you. If you want to join the program, 921-1530, in the 916 area code, 921-1530, or toll-free 1-800-834-1530. Or you can send us an email, questions@moneymatters.com. This is Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McClain.
Glad you are part of the program with us today.
Hey, Scott, before we go to calls.
Yes, sir.
My 17-year-old daughter, senior, she's taking an economics class, and I was...
Is she enjoying the economics class?
She hates it. She absolutely hates it, and she's a good student. So I asked her how I was doing, because she'll come and say, "Hey, Dad, it's supply and demand," and then I give her some answers. So about once a week, I say, "How's my grade in economics?" So the other night she was
because you're helping her.
I'm helping her, but she was looking at personal tax rates, and I said to her, "You know, if you study this stuff and you get real good, you could become a financial planner like myself." And she said to me, "Dad, I'd rather be a zookeeper," which is the equivalent of saying I'd rather shovel exotic animal.
Yeah, I suppose. Well.
So every week.
When my daughter was in third grade, we did the parent-teacher meeting type thing. And they always say the good things about your kid first. Jessica's good. And then she says, one thing, Jessica doesn't know her money. She doesn't know the coins or anything. She doesn't know her money. And her mother says, "Well, her dad is a financial advisor." Anyway. All right.
She knows it now, which is...
But she knows. She knows my money.
Yeah, it's plastic.
She's a college student.
That plastic
knows my
thing.
I shouldn't have any credit card.
Oh, you don't give her a credit card?
Heck no.
Really?
You gave your kid a credit card?
Absolutely.
My daughter didn't want a credit card. She says, "I don't need that temptation in my life."
Oh, no. Absolutely.
She got a debit card.
No, we have a credit card.
And she manages to text me when she has financial needs.
Oh.
No, but we got... Anyway, she's...
All right, let's get to the phones. Let's talk to Mike.
Mike, you're with Hanson McClain.
Yeah, hi, guys. I had a couple questions. On the variable annuity, are you required to take it out like you do an IRA when you hit a certain age?
No.
So you can keep that for... as long as you live.
Yeah, you can buy...
to withdraw funds.
That is correct. You can buy a variable annuity. And a variable annuity is essentially...
I've had one about 30 years.
Yeah, but...
That's why I'm asking.
So it depends. So a variable annuity is essentially an insurance wrapper on a bunch of mutual fund type investments that allow for tax-deferred growth. But there are many that are held inside of retirement plans, such as 403Bs or IRAs. And if they're held inside of a retirement plan, you are required to take required minimum distributions at 70.5.
I see.
And which one do you have?
Well, mine's outside of retirement.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Mike. For many years, we weren't big fans of variable annuities, but as the tax rates get higher and higher, and there's some very low-cost variable annuities today that you're paying next to nothing, really, for the insurance wrapper on them. And what the benefit of that is you can own... mutual fund type investments and make exchanges, trade from this to that, do rebalances, and you're not taxed at all until the money's pulled out. And so for high income people that are being hit not only the top tax rates of 39.6% federal, 13.3% state, 3.9% Obamacare tax, we're at over 50%.
Let me get my calculator.
For some of those people, it makes sense.
And it certainly makes sense if you plan on moving to a lower income tax state when you start taking withdrawals.
Could make sense. The downside, though, of course, is the money that's withdrawn is taxed as ordinary income.
Right. So at least you got a choice of when you have to take it out.
That's right.
Correct.
So
why don't they raise that 70.5 year to like 73 or 4?
Well,
that'd be nice.
Because here's why that's never going to happen. I suppose I know why it's never going to happen.
I was being rhetorical.
Got it. Because it produces income.
Yeah, it's going to take cut tax revenues.
But the answer to your question is, if you hold a variable annuity outside a qualified pension plan or IRA, there are no required minimum distributions.
I got a real quick second question.
Yes, sir.
What does divisor do they use to determine how much to take out of your IRAs after you're 70 and a half?
It's your
they
life.
Just go from... To 86, is use your lifespan or what?
Plus 10 years.
Well, you know, pardon it's me? Actually more complicated than that. It's a life expectancy table based upon you and someone 10 years younger than you. That's where they get the divisor number. It's just like a lot of laws that are just kind of everything's added onto something else, right? So today,
was it the same for everybody?
Absolutely, unless you're married to someone that's greater than 10 years your junior.
Yeah. Well, what is that number between 70 and a half
so
and your
essentially
life
at 70 and a half, it's 26, and your life expectancy is
whatever.
16.
But every year it stretches a little longer.
Well, it's 86. Is man?
No. It's not 80. It's not 86 because once you get to 86, the number isn't zero.
You still have life
expectancy. So it moves every year. So it's not not a constant.
Yeah, and just go online. You could look at the table's pretty easy to find. Anyway, appreciate the call, Mike.
Thank you.
You know, the thing with variable annuities, I'm almost tempted to start using them again, but challenge is when you pull the income out, it's taxed as ordinary income. And a lot of the gain you're going to have is capital gain. So
as an example,
if you bought the S&P 500 in an index mutual fund, and you put in $100,000 and you let it grow till $200,000, some of that gain is going to be a reinvestment of dividends, which are taxed along the way. But the vast majority is going to be a capital appreciation, which you can then you can pay capital gains rates. And if you die with it, all that tax gain is forgiven. You own a variable annuity. You have the same sort of experience. You withdraw money. It's first of all, you have to pull out your income first, all the growth first, taxes or in your income. You die, it's still going to get taxed.
Unless you annuitize it over a period of years.
But you're still taxed.
Correct. You're just not. So I am, Scott, you could make an argument for it, but I would still use a tax-efficient account outside of a variable annuity, a non-qualified variable annuity in order to do it. Just makes the most sense.
The tax rates are still not so onerous. They're onerous, but the taxation of the annuities, although they're tax deferred, it's only tax deferred. And you got to look at what's the tax treatment on the back end. And the tax treatment on the back end, to me, doesn't look like, and to most advisors, doesn't look like it's going to be preferable than to having investments just held outside of the variable annuities. But there's a place for most things, and there's going to be times when you certainly wouldn't have everything of your retirement savings.
It wouldn't take much of a change in the tax laws in order to make these things attractive. More attractive. If they changed the way capital gains taxes were levied.
If capital gain taxes, well, two things. One, if capital gain taxes were increased, and if someone did not receive a stepped-up basis upon death.
That's
which
correct.
There was talk of getting rid of that, and I certainly wouldn't be... I don't know why that capital gains forgiven at death anyway. It doesn't really... I could see if they have a certain amount of, maybe even a
all
limit
the first
on that.
Exemption, like the first $1 million.
Yeah, let's say you bought a house in, on the coast, on the ocean 50 years ago for $10,000, let's say, and it's worth $10 million today, just based on location.
Mm-hmm.
That all that capital gain, you die, your heirs are going to receive the house, $10 million, that gain is all forgiven. You sell it, you're going to pay capital gain, you die with it, it's all forgiven. That's, why is that?
Yeah. The tax law.
I understand. Okay.
You know, so I was down.
You could certainly see Congress getting rid of that.
So I was down at Half Moon Bay a while ago, and
are we hearing about your fancy escapades of vacations?
We're sleeping in a car. So no,
car. My brother and I were.
So no, here's my point. So I see this old house, and there's no houses along the coast, but this old house. It looked like it was 150 years old, and it was about, I don't know, a half mile in from the coast.
$32 million.
And I thought to myself, well, it was an old farmhouse. It was probably 150 years
still
old.
Still worth $32 million.
But my thought was, could you imagine moving to the coast 150 years ago and building a house right on the edge of the coast? what your friends and neighbors would say. What are you, out of your mind? Why would you put your house so close to the water? They would say, you know, if you move it further away, you're not going to be affected as much by the weather.
Of course.
Yeah. It's yeah, but crazy.
Well, we have good heating systems, air conditioning, and everything else.
Maybe. Better construction materials. I understand why it happened. Thank you.
That's why I'm really happy to be way 100 miles away from the ocean. It's much better. I would hate to have a home on the coast in Northern California. Much better to be way inland.
All right, you done?
Yeah. 921-1530. Let's talk to Barbara. Barbara, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Good morning.
Good morning, Barbara.
I have a question. My husband passed away a couple of months ago, and
sorry,
we have a trust, and the stock that we own is in the trust. Do I have to take his name off of that stock?
Is the stock in his name, or is it in the name of the trust?
It's in both of our names, you know, the trust, blah, 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 how that reads.
Oh, on the stock certificates or in the brokerage account which holds the stock. It says the Barbara and Family Trust. Is that what it reads?
Yes, yes. And it will say the Emmett and Barbara, blah, 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 trust. You know, that's how it reads.
Correct. You do not have to take his name off.
Okay. No. So not, if I die or if I have to sell it or anything, there won't be a problem.
That is correct.
Yeah, because you are, I'm assuming you're one of the trustees, which.
Yes, I am.
Yes. So you don't really need to, you don't really need to do anything.
Okay. What about, I'm not even sure who holds it. How do I find that out? I think it's Fidelity that holds it.
So you've got a statement, correct?
We get a statement from the company.
Okay, so you get a statement from the stock, you have one stock, two stocks?
No, we have several.
And you hold the stocks, each one shows up on its own statement from the transfer agent, the custodian. How does it, do they all show
yes,
up on one
yes,
statement?
We get one from each
okay,
company.
All right. So here's what you should do. You should actually deposit them all in a brokerage account so that they all show up on one statement. You're doing this for your heirs. You're not doing this as much for yourself.
Right.
Well, it'll make your life easier too, particularly at tax time.
And it's also the time where you should actually look to see what that portfolio looks like.
But your husband passed away 2 months ago?
Yes.
Yeah, you should wait.
I wouldn't do anything for these 6 months.
Wait some.
Okay.
Wait some.
Okay.
I wouldn't do anything. Don't talk to any financial people for at least a few more months.
But
seriously.
But there's nothing you need to do right now. Call us back in 6 months and we'll actually walk you through this.
I have one more quick question.
Okay. Yes.
He has, from work, he was retired, but he had as a death benefit, and he also has a life insurance. I can have wait 2 years, you know, I don't have to take it till 2015 if I want to leave it there, or I can take it, but I was worried about the tax consequences.
If you don't have, here's a general rule.
Yeah.
If you don't have to make a decision right away, don't.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Because... I mean, you lost your life partner, and life is a fog right now, right? And and so if you don't have to make a decision right now, don't make a decision right now. So if
life insurance is going to be paid into a low interest rate bearing account, which would be similar
unless it's
to a bank
death
CD.
Benefit on a pension, of which case that may need to be rolled over. But if they tell you you don't have to make a decision today, I wouldn't make any decision.
Great. That's all I needed to know. Yeah. I want to thank you guys, and I love the show.
Thanks.
Thank
Call us back in about 4 or 5 months, and then
we'll walk through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Barbara. And it's one of those things that, I mean, we're pretty adamant about don't make any big financial decisions when you lose a loved one like this.
Yeah, it's stressful.
Oh, well, life is stressful enough. I mean, I can't actually imagine what it's like, but I've certainly
but
had
you've
some
seen
loved
it.
Ones. Yes, and it's...
And you've seen it with clients, and we like to postpone until everything kind of emotionally settles down.
But there clearly are some planning opportunities. One is, we just talked about the stepped up and basis people have. It's a great time to look at rebalancing a portfolio, because oftentimes people hold investments because of the tax consequences. This gives them a chance to rebalance, reallocate the dollars without paying any tax consequences. We're taking a short break here, 921-1530. To join the program, we do have a couple lines open if you want to join us. 921-1530. This is Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean Advisors. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters on this fantastic Saturday. I just fantastic. kind of cloudy.
Yes. Nice. Huh?
It's nice. Fine. Like a little more rain.
Yes. Who wouldn't?
Well, I guess it depends where you live.
Well, it's where I live.
Who wouldn't?
I guess if you lived in Seattle, you're not seeing more rain.
Probably not. Or somewhere it rains a couple hundred inches a year or something.
Yeah.
Arcata, where my sister lives. It's like the coldest place in the world. You ever been up there? Eureka and all that?
I have lots of clients in...
It's cold. It's because it's like this damp. It'll be like 42 Eureka. Degrees and damp. Foggy, cold, foggy. It's about the worst.
They used to use the airport up there. They have a massive runway on the airport, and they used to use it for military training to landing in fog prior to radar.
Oh, really? See?
It makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
We better get back to financial matters because we're talking about things we have no
like
idea.
Aviation.
Yeah, aviation. Oh, Pat has one of those. Pat's one of these guys that has the ability to carry out a conversation with somebody, even though he knows nothing about it. I remember when years ago we first started working together, and there was someone, I think someone in our office, he was talking about helicopters or something. Oh yeah, Pat says, oh yeah, the such and such Chinook or something, right? And after the person left the office, says, Pat, how'd you know anything? Oh, he says, I don't know anything about it. I just picked up a word that guy said, no. So I repeated it back.
I read I know a little bit. Mm-hmm. I read a fair amount.
All right. You probably, anyway. This is a financial program. We're talking about financial stuff. So let's go here to Jimmy. Jimmy, thanks for holding. You're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Yes, sir. My name is Jimmy, and I have a situation with a consolidation on KMIKMP. You may be familiar with that, and I am facing a long-term capital gains by the consolidation.
Uh-huh.
And wondered if you are familiar with that situation or could advise me, because I am going to have to pay.
Yep. So I am not, Jimmy, I am not familiar with KMI. And would you say it's KMI?
What's the name of the company?
Kinder Morgan Incorporated.
Got it. Okay.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Is resuming all of their outstanding limited partnerships and going to become one company.
Okay. I think it's actually probably a good thing. It is amazing where that company has come from the last 20 years. And the leader of that company is obviously a very talented individual in this space. Granted, they've had a nice tailwind from rising oil prices over the years, energy company. But what happens, whether it's this company or another company, when there's a change in the structure, there are times when it creates a taxable event. Sometimes you'll see a company sold to somebody else and they receive cash for the sale. It's a taxable event. And
this is part of what they are doing. As I understand it, they are one of the first limited partnerships to consolidate like this, and they are killing all of the stockholders.
You just don't like the fact that you have to pay capital gains and you don't have any choice in the matter because it's being forced on you. I think using the word killing is a little strong, Jimmy.
Well, I'm holding a large portion in both of the company and the surviving company.
Uh-huh.
And it is going to be a situation where everybody who has years are going to be taxed.
That's correct.
According to their capital gains, because they had a return of capital.
That's correct.
Rather than anything else.
That's correct. That is correct. So what happens is,
but it's only based upon gains that management is able to
It's not on the surviving company. You're not paying taxes on the surviving company. You're only paying taxes on the your limited partnerships that are being absorbed.
Being merged.
Yeah, correct. So here's what happened for the rest of the listeners. Jimmy owns some limited partnerships in a kind of Kinder Morgan. Actually,
they had a bunch of partnerships.
They're rolling them all together, and in doing so, it's creating a capital gains tax. There's nothing you can actually do about it, Jimmy. You should be happy that it's a gain rather than a loss. I know you're unhappy that you're going to have to pay taxes on it.
The only things you can do to reduce your tax liability. One is look for something that you have in your portfolio that you can sell for a loss, if that's possible. Two, you can transfer these shares prior to the merger being completed. So you can either transfer them to a charity, transfer to an irrevocable trust. Depending on the overall the size of your estate and everything else, there are some planning things you could do. But there's nothing you can do to avoid the reporting of the capital gain. That's going to happen regardless. And it would take a majority of a shareholders to make a stink to say I don't want this.
I am thinking in regards to selling the company outright and not allowing a 2-for-1 stock split to occur and see where it goes from there. I'm talking about $100,000 worth of gains.
Yes. Yeah, correct. And it may or may not be a good idea to sell that stock out completely. It may or may not be a good idea to keep it. We don't know in your situation.
I'm thinking I am in a 35% bracket, and if I sell it long term, I will be in a 15% bracket.
Correct. But if they sell it, if they sell the shares, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter whether you decide to sell it or they decide to sell it. The taxation is the same.
Okay.
So it doesn't come in, just because they decide to sell it doesn't make it ordinary income taxes.
Yeah,
well, they are going to borrow the money to pay the cash dividend and are issuing a new issue of stock.
Got it.
Which I think would be a preferred rather than a regular stock.
We would recommend you look at this in conjunction with everything else in your portfolio. Make the decision to either keep it or sell it based upon that. But there's nothing you can do at this point with the taxes on it. You're stuck with the taxes assuming the transaction's done. And we see this, and I know this is frustrating, but you got to figure all the executives at Kinder Morgan are the same tax position or worse than what you're in.
And they're willing to do it.
So, and I remember reading about this, and we don't have a position in this particular company, but I remember reading about this a few months back, and I thought, that makes sense to me. Mr. Kinder, he seems like a really talented, interesting guy in the energy space. He seems like one of those managers that just has some excess talent. And
it aligns everyone's interest even closer to be one company rather than all these limited partnerships.
But there are other times as shareholders that you can get stuck with capital gains. If you own stock in a company that the shareholders decide to sell the company to somebody else, we see this all the time. Sometimes it's just a company will acquire a company with just stock. It's just a stock swap. And so if you have a stock swap, there's no taxation. Sometimes it's stock and cash, and sometimes it's all cash. So you might own stock in a company. The management says, you know what? I think it's a great time to sell. They sell out to some other company. The other company chooses to pay cash. If they pay cash, it's a taxable event to you on any gain that you have. And as frustrating as it can be to pay taxes, remember, a capital gain is always better than a capital loss. You would always rather have a gain. And you invest for gains. And the taxes are just something that it's good to try to minimize as much as possible, plan for as much as possible. Clearly there are times, particularly if you're maybe later in life and you've got something that you don't want to ever incur the capital gain on it, you don't have a lot of options. But
it's the way it is.
This is the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, and don't ever let taxes drive the bus. It's the investments that drive the bus, which means you see people make bad investment choices because they don't want to pay taxes.
All the time. People hold positions. It's maybe time to get rid of something or clearly time to diversify something. They say, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to pay the taxes because I've got, I paid next to nothing. It's worth this now. All this tax that I have to pay, I can't get something.
How many people called this show in 2006 and wanted to do a 1035 exchange into a tenants in common?
Oh, I remember begging some people, please. This is a way.
We saw him coming into our office too. He said, "Don't do this. This makes no sense. Pay the tax."
This is a way when your real estate prices were up, and they wanted to get rid of individual ownership, so they decided to go into partners. Tenants in common is a way to have 20 partners of whom you've never met,
which all have to agree on every change in the portfolio.
Those didn't work out well for just about anything. Anyway, capital gains always better than capital loss, and sometimes these things happen. We just don't have any control over them. We need to take a quick break here. 921-1530 to join the program. If you want to send us an email, questions@moneymatters.com. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Hanson McLean back with you, Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
We're enjoying ourselves this week.
Absolutely. Enjoy the show, actually. I enjoy doing it. I just don't like coming here. I actually like doing the show.
I always enjoy doing the show as well.
Isn't that mostly like work? You get in the car, you're like, I'd like to do something else. But once you're there, it's fine.
I've always had the attitude that Mondays are my favorite day in the week because you've got the whole week ahead of you still to work. And obviously, I'm a human like everyone. And there are days I get, it's like, Monday, back to the grind. But the fact is, most days I enjoy my job, and I change my attitude on sometimes.
Yes, but it's like anything else. I tell my kids.
Granted, I'm not digging ditches for a living either.
You're not working in the salt mine.
Yeah. Although I like to tell my kids, I said the other day, I'm heading deep in the salt mines today. My son says, "What?" I said, "I'm heading deep in the salt mines. Going to be working hard today." He like looked at me like I was an. Yeah, Dad. Feeling really bad
really,
for you.
Huh?
Woo, let me get out the violin. Anyway. All right, let's steal back the phones here. We're talking to Dan. Dan, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello, Scott. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. I just wanted to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, you know, in case you don't get told by anybody later on.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I have a two-part question with a prelude question leading into a main question, okay, in that.
All righty. we'll try to keep on track here.
Okay, thank you. And I wish I had a volume with the guy that called before, because then I would like to have, like, the made a profit, and even if I had to pay the taxes, at least it would be something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, what if I just got to watch, it was like a rerun thing, but the Martin Smith, Uncovering the Madoff Affair. Now, I have a question for you guys, you know, and then I'll receive my answer off the air, but what if you were investing into a company and you decide, I think I want my money back, and then if the person was to call you back and say, you know, if you want your money back, you know, really roughly said, you can just take it or whatever. I mean, what would you guys reply to that? And then whatever happened to Bernie Madoff's people that lost money?
Got it.
Compensated, and then I'll just receive my answer off the air.
All right, I appreciate that, Dan. So the two-part question, right, which is, what happens if you get your money back, right? How do you get your money back? Well,
you don't get it.
Most of the time, you don't get it back. And in fact, that's typically when a Ponzi scheme actually starts to fall apart, is when you're supposed to get a normal redemption or a normal payment, and it doesn't come. So what that means is someone says, oh, invest $100,000 with me. We're going to give you 10% interest every year. And for the first couple of years, they send you the $10,000, which is 10% on $100,000.
And they get that money because they entice other investors or sometimes the same investors will say, hey, look what a great return. You sure you want your money? Why don't you just keep it here and let it grow?
And that's normally how they when the payments start getting missed, then that's when the sign of a Ponzi scheme. If you invest in a small company, typically you don't have any liquidity at all unless someone else offers to buy your shares from you. So there's a big difference. Not all investments in small companies are Ponzi schemes, but you should recognize the difference between the two. Second question, what happened to the Madoff victims? Some of the victims didn't get any money back at all. And the reason they didn't get any money back at all...
Is that right?
Yes, is because of the fact that the payments that they had received over the years were the same or greater.
They got all their principal back.
Through their payments. So therefore, they were not technically injured in this. They were only injured in that the story Bernie Madoff told them wasn't true. But many of them actually were sued if they received more back than they had actually deposited.
Yeah, clawback.
Which is a clawback, which the federal government can use.
Which is essentially, it's both Pat and I invest. Pat invests in the early years. I invest. I'm the last guy in. Pat got his investment and then some back. I haven't gotten any back. And I say, wait a minute. You didn't really get a return on your investment. You got my money.
That's exactly what
happened. They took my money and distributed it to Pat. So
if I had assets at that point in time, the government would sue me for the return of those assets. So the second thing that happened is that there were these feeder funds that were actually aggregating money from investors and actually then giving them to Bernie Madoff. And they were charging a percentage of this. Many of them actually knew that it wasn't up and up. So this was, they were essentially complicit in the execution of the crime of this Ponzi. They were sued for their assets and returned much of them. One of the gentlemen had committed suicide. His estate was sued for the assets. So, but at the end of the day, most people received anywhere between 50 and 70% of their initial investments back from the Bernie Madoff scheme. And how do I know this? I found this whole thing to be absolutely amazing that he was the so high up in the New York finance scene and was at one point in time on the board of the governors of the NASDAQ. I've read two books about this guy because it was hard to believe that this crime was, it was 20 years in the making. 20 plus years in the making, and that he had never, ever, ever made a single trade in any of his accounts.
Yeah. So, I mean, so for an investor today, if you're looking, let's say you meet a financial advisor, mm-hmm. friend introduced you to him, and thinking, I wonder if I should invest with that person. Here's how you make sure it's not a Bernie Madoff. Make sure that the money is held in a separate account, not Jim Smith financial account. So in other words, have the account held at Fidelity, Charles Schwab,
E-Trade,
TD Ameritrade, Pershing,
E-Trade, Bank of New York. It goes on and on, but it's not held at Madoff Investments. Because one of the reasons that Bernie could get away with this, Bernie Madoff, is because it was actually held at his own company.
Yes.
And he manufactured his own statements.
Because he had control of it all. If he had held the assets at a Fidelity company or Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade, he wouldn't have been able to do this.
Yeah, and the second thing you would look at is their accounting firm that audits them. They had, which was actually amazing, it was a storefront accounting firm with one single accountant that supposedly was auditing Bernie Madoff. Audits never took place. He just gave them an audit letter.
Well, obviously wasn't a very good auditor.
No.
I mean, come on. Anyway, all right, let's continue on here. We'll talk to Michael. Michael, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, thank you, Michael.
Quick question. So I'm in a situation where I have a first mortgage and a second mortgage, looking to refinance the first and continue to subordinate the second, and trying to decide if we should go back down to a 30 or stay in a 25-year term. We're 5 years into a 30-year mortgage. The goal is to try as much as we can to pay off that second. So if we go down to a 30, we can then take those savings and put them right onto the second. Or we could get a lower interest rate, keep with the 25-year term, so we wouldn't lose those 5 years we need to pay now. So we're trying to decide which go with.
Let me ask you a couple questions. What is the first mortgage amount?
367.
And what's the interest rate on that?
4.625.
And what's the second mortgage amount?
It's 147, and it's prime minus a half.
It's I'm sorry.
Prime
what is it?
Prime minus a half.
Okay.
Yes.
And what's the value of the home?
760.
You know, I would look at actually. You know what I think I would do is I would actually. And how much of your payments are you making on the combined between the two?
What's the total payment?
Yeah, between the two.
It's about $2,800 right now, what we pay.
The first and second?
Correct.
And how old are you, Michael?
41.
And what's your approximate income?
About $80,000.
And do you have kids in the house?
Yes.
How old are they?
10 and 6.
What, so does your wife work outside of the home as well?
No.
Your income is $80,000 a month? Or a year, $80,000
a month.
$80,000 a year?
Yeah.
Yes.
And your payments are $2,800 a month?
Yes. That does not include taxes and insurance.
Right.
Though.
So you have a very large percentage of your income going to your house, don't you?
Yes.
I would. What's the chance of your wife going back into the workplace once the kids are older?
Once the kids are older, that's a pretty good chance.
I would actually take the first.
Are you contributing to your 401k through work?
Well, yeah, I'm a small business owner, so the 401k is minimal.
Did you have
basically?
You had better years when you bought this house in terms of business when you were making a lot more money.
I wasn't self-employed at the time. We were both working at the time, so yes.
Okay, right. I would get a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage on both the first and second.
Well, he might not be able to get it on the second.
Or just because
the first.
Saying,
yeah, I'd do 30
combine
years.
Combine the two.
I would combine the two if I could.
Okay.
If you can combine the two, would be the best thing you could do.
Yeah. The reality is, this is too much house for your income. This is way too much house for your income.
Gotcha.
I mean, that's the reality. If you wanted the straight scoop, I wouldn't worry about these two. I'd be looking to downsize.
Okay.
You're spending.
How many kids do you have at home?
Yeah, two kids.
Two.
It's
is
tough.
The logic in combining the two to eliminate the adjustable rate on the second?
And to try to keep the payment a fixed number for 30 years. So you can always pay more. You can't pay less. Right. So getting a 30-year mortgage is to drive the overall cost on a monthly basis down. But the reality is, this is way too much house for you. It's a struggle every month at your house.
Gotcha.
You guys are house poor.
Okay.
And you can get out. You can get out and have money in the bank. I know that's hard to say because you've got your whole life is up there. But I would do a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. And maybe if you stay in the house, how old are the kids?
10 and 6.
I would say,
if he stays in the house, if you believe your income's going to go up, you're self-employed, if you think that a few years from now your income will be up, you think another 10 years from now your wife will be back in the workplace, and you're willing to stick it out, then refinance both of these into a 30-year fix.
I would do that, a 30-year fix on both of them.
And then you could worry about accelerating later.
After the kids move out of the house, or when the kids move out of the house, you might decide to downsize at that point in time, move to something smaller. Or just move away and not tell them where you went?
Okay.
Our plan.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, Michael, I'm glad you called the program and got someone else's opinion on it. So, anyway, that's our kind of thought on it. So we wish you well. We are, this music means that we are out of time. We come here every Saturday from 10 to 11, run a rebroadcast show on Sundays 2 to 3. Learn more about us, visit our website, hansonmclain.com. You can sign up for podcasts of this very program there as well. hansonmclain.com. Enjoy your week. We'll see you next.